The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockley right back with you here. It's 710 KNUS on The George Show. The Rocky Mountain Way includes this writer and this voice right here. I'm happy to have her join us. Patty Calhoun from Westward. How are you, Patty?
I'm good, George. As you've learned, I get up early.
Yeah, that's a nice change. In my mind, I pictured you rolling out of bed sometime around 11:30 or noon.
No, I'm a person who likes to watch the sunrise, and I happen to live right over I-25, so the great view of the sunrise over downtown.
And this morning's was
traffic.
Pretty cool. It was kind of orangey pinky thing coming up over here as I was walking around.
It was an orange winter, unlike the Broncos.
Yeah, oh my sweet goodness, Patty, are you a Broncos fan?
No,
well,
I have to say no, and they're not giving me any reason to change my mind.
That is so. You've been in the area here how long?
45 years.
So really, since birth?
Yes. Oh, since before birth, let's say.
Prenatal. Where did you grow up, Patty?
I grew up in the Chicago suburbs.
Like John Hughes country, Breakfast Club kind of thing.
Very John Hughes country. In fact, he filmed a lot of his movies, like in the church I went to and that area.
I just sat down to rewatch for the first time in forever Home Alone. And it still sells for me. I mean, that's, what, 1990-something? I mean, unbelievably old. And yet I watched it and I thought, I enjoy this even now. Although you definitely notice the change in technology, right? Like the lack of cell phones. Every phone is attached to the wall by a cord. I don't know. It was a great experience. And I think to myself, this is great John Hughes from right there. And I don't even know if he's the one that did it, but it's Chicago area.
Oh, yeah, it was him, and it had to be at least 30 years ago. And when you think about it, you can't do all those crazy missed connections things anymore because you have to figure out why people wouldn't have their cell phone, why their cell phones would be dead. That whole plot wouldn't work.
No, in Home Alone 2, which is a couple years later, they still revived the Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern bad guys, you know, slapstick bad guys. But during that time when it's Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, Macaulay Culkin is actually filmed at the top of the World Trade Center at one point earlier on in the movie as he's doing his own self tour of New York. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, that is that long ago. We haven't. My kids have never lived in a world that have had the World Trade Centers. Just a huge difference. Still a good movie, not nearly as good as the first. But anyway, interesting flashback. Sorry to take you down that road. Wanted to talk to you about a couple things, and that is one. You are a staple of Colorado Inside and Out, and that is a Rocky Mountain PBS product. I just want more people to tune in and watch it. Tell us about it. Like, when does it air? All that stuff.
Well, first I have to correct you. It's Colorado PBS.
Oh, is it really? I thought it was Rocky Mountain. It's not?
No, Denver is lucky enough to have two public television stations. The original one is Rocky Mountain PBS, Channel 6 to most.
Yeah, 6, right.
Kind of grew out of Denver Public Schools, as most of those public TV stations did in the 50s.
Wow.
But in the late 70s, exactly when Westward was starting, there was a group that decided to do an alternative public television station, which went through a couple different iterations in names, but was Channel 12.
Oh, wow.
Currently, that's Colorado 12, Colorado PBS, and it's on 12.
And that's where Colorado Inside Out is.
And that's the one you were on, so be sure you get that straight. It is on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. It's changed times a few times, but it's been going over 25 years, almost 30 years.
Have you been on the whole time?
And I have been on since the beginning.
Oh, my gosh. You are the regular. Now, from time to time, all the people with real credibility can't make it for various scheduling conflicts, and they work their way down the list. It's not alphabetical, and finally they landed on me. And we ended up doing one out there at the Tattered Cover, temporary headquarters, while I imagine they were sprucing up wherever it is that you normally do it. And It was cool. It was great. It was also a lot of pressure. Patty, and I've said this on the radio, it seems like you've been doing this so long and you're just so fluid with the information and know how to put it all in the right amount of time that I'm like, dang, I just want to go first. I don't want to go after Patty, but they make it kind of a round table thing. And I was just impressed with the whole setup, the production quality, and how smart everyone was. And it was off-putting.
You were great on it. What's so interesting about Colorado Inside Out, and even though it's changing, and that was part of the change because they were redoing the set when we were at the Tattered Cover, and they are bringing in different voices. But it's always been like having a conversation with people you could run into on the streets of Denver. It's like a cocktail party without the cocktails. It's like standing in line at the grocery store and chatting with people about the issues of the day. Sometimes the people are unusually knowledgeable about the issues, but it's really a good way to connect the community to the city they live in. And that's what I love about Colorado Inside Out. You've got a lot of people who don't agree.
That's right.
Can all talk civilly.
Well, that's the key right there, is that it's a civil conversation. There is no Dan Aykroyd, Jane Curtin, Jane, you ignorant slut moment in there. It's all just people that you probably walk past on the street or see at the store and never give another thought about. And you're exchanging this information in a way. It's surprising, too, some of the positions that folks took during our little thing. I thought, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, or man, I didn't expect that from you. It was fascinating to be a part of.
And one of the things fans, and I know people who watch it because they come, people I don't know who come up to me and be like, am I supposed to know you? But they've just seen Channel 12 and they feel like they know everyone because it comes into their living room every Friday night at 8 o'clock. So it is changing. I mean, you're going to be on, I think, this Friday when we're talking about Club Q and related things.
Never
so
heard of it.
They are shifting the format a little bit to maybe focus on one topic occasionally and bring in different people. And I think that's great. I mean, the more Denver's changing, you should have the show evolve too.
Yeah, we're talking with Patty Calhoun from Westward and Colorado Inside Out. You brought up the Club Q thing. I'm glad you did. And maybe this is something we'll end up having a deeper conversation on with the show this week. You've got historic perspective here. You and I both. I grew up here. Like, I don't know any other home than this. You've been here for 4.5 decades. You've been through the Columbines, the Aurora Theaters, the STEM, the fill-in-the-blank. When Club Q happens, from your vantage point, how do you process that? How does that impact you? What is going on?
You know, it still hits you in the gut whenever there is a mass shooting, just the way Columbine did. You just can't believe that it's happening again and that it's happening here. You know, then you figure out from a newspaper standpoint, how do you cover it? And of course, since Columbine, things have changed a lot because you can do things as a weekly. You can do things quickly online. But in this case, covering this story, you can talk a lot about the victims, and they are the survivors are making themselves available to speak, which is great. So you have voices. But so much is unknown, even though we think we know things, that you wrote about it. The sealed documents from the incident, 18 months ago, which has led to so much speculation, we have no idea what really went on there with the bomb threat with the mother. And we'll find that out. The binary issue, there's so many strange things going on in this. And then the bottom line is you've lost 5 lives. It's tremendously sad. You see, the national media likes to talk a lot about Colorado Springs, you know, the home of Focus on the Family, the hate state, when we passed Amendment 2 back in 1992. But it's so much more than that. It is just a tragedy that is almost beyond understanding, but we want to understand it so we can prevent it from happening again.
Now, I appreciate that aspect of it, that we want to know what happened so we can try to minimize, because we'll never prevent these things, Patty. I'm convinced no matter if we magicked away every single gun in America, we're not going to prevent evil from showing up in ways that we just continue to be shocked by. And we should hopefully continue to be shocked by it. But I do like the idea of trying to figure out what went wrong. But there's an aspect of this that is concerning me, and that is it feels like it's less about how do we fix it for some than it is about who do we blame? How can we blame someone for this happening? And right now, the focus seems to be that the blame is going to fall on law enforcement for failing to seek a red flag protection order. And that's sort of Governor Polis, and we've got some sound of this. Governor Polis was on national programs this Sunday auditioning for president, in my opinion, but also addressing real issues of this red flag thing. He was on Meet the Press. He was on Face the Nation. Did you get a chance to see either of those? And what are your thoughts on that red flag issue?
Well, I'll say I missed both of those. But the fact that red flag would be coming up again isn't as surprising, because this is one of three mass shootings, in a week before Thanksgiving. So people are looking, they're looking for blame. You have to go beyond blame to say, can there be any fixes? And let me go quickly on a tangent, which is, think about Uvalde, the shootings in Texas.
Oh my God.
We learned something with Columbine, which is you don't wait.
Don't wait.
Think you go in. Law enforcement goes in no matter what. And it didn't happen in Texas. And we see what happens when you don't learn from the past. So sure, there's going to be blame, but what lessons can you learn from it that will help? Of course, evil is going to happen again, but can we stop some?
I don't know. And one, I think the answer is no. I don't think you can stop all evil, but can you stop some? Yes. And can we improve this system to come up with a better outcome? I think we can. I hope we can. But if some of it is predicated upon, and the president has rushed forward to say, hey, listen, I'm going to really push for an assault weapons ban with this lame duck Congress, now that I know that America has spoken and they don't want the Dems in charge of the House anymore. That's my editorial comment, Patty. You don't have to echo that. I just don't think that's the answer. I don't think preventing people who would go through a lawful process to acquire firearms is going to minimize these things. When you look at some of the stuff that's leaking out now, maybe leaking out's the wrong term, but ghost gun, you know, got a gun from another person. I mean, these are things that the law just can't fix if you're not interested in following it.
Well, the problem, so it becomes, can you fix some things and cut down? You've got to go from so many different angles. And I do think red flag, we need to have a big discussion. But right now, everyone, it's just supposition, because no one really knows what's in those files.
Well, and you,
no one knows if red flag would have applied.
You bring up a great point, and that is the sealing statute. And you may be aware of this, but over the last two out of the last three or four legislative cycles, we have really beefed up the sealing statute to make it apply to far more crimes far earlier, with far less participation by the prosecution and far more automatically. There are good reasons for it. Now, somebody interviewed me and asked me, why do we even have this? And I'm like, listen, if a case ends up getting dismissed against a person we were presuming innocent to begin with, maybe we ought to, you know, treat them like they hadn't committed the crime. And so I get why we do it, but that thing is so strong and so automatic that whatever led to that case being dismissed, and I think, by the way, it's going to be proven false that no charges were filed. I think that's fake. I think charges were filed and this thing was prosecuted to some level. Don't know when it went away, but that's what's holding this thing back. And now we have it resting entirely 100% with the discretion of the court. One concern I have is, what if it's the court that made the mistake? What if it's the court that dismissed the case for reasons that people would find sketchy or they're skeptical of? The court is now in the position to say, well, I'm not going to reveal to you why the case got dismissed or how it got dismissed. And then when do we ever get to know?
Right. And if we don't know, then everyone will still be using the supposition and speculation, and we won't get any further. So that's a real dilemma. And of course, this is one where we're going to agree. The journalists would like to have more access to these sealed records. And a fascinating side note on this is that the alleged shooter actually had called the Denver Gazette maybe back this summer and wanted a story they had online, which was filed after the original incident, taken off because the case is sealed. And journalists have this dilemma all the time. You report
That's
on the
point.
Initial episode, then if someone is acquitted or the charges are dropped, how do you go back and rewrite the original story, which was accurate at the time, but now might need to be updated or just disappear? And the alleged shooter actually had called the Gazette, so they had an interview with the guy about he's saying this didn't happen, take down the story, or the charges had been dropped or the record sealed. I can't remember exactly what he told them.
Well, Patty, if you had listen, you're the editor here. If you had the discretion, and you do you disappear that original article? Do you amend it to add something to the end? Or do you just write another piece that says, hey, we reported on this, here was the outcome, peace?
On he didn't call us in this case. We haven't reported the original story because it's in Colorado Springs. What we will do is if someone contacts us about a story that's that old, and we get them about 10 years old, 20 years old, if the charges were dropped, we will ask you on an update, and we'll either update the story or if it's inappropriate, we'll take it down. But that's the only case, really. We'll always correct errors if people point them out to us. But it's a record of history at the time it happened. So we don't take down stories just because they're embarrassing to people or they want them down. We'll take them down if indeed there's something that has happened since
Interesting.
That makes the original story obsolete.
That's interesting to me, too. And I realize it's self-censorship, and I would never want the government to step in to mandate something like that. But it's not that you reported anything inaccurately. In fact, you reported everything accurately, and then it turns out that procedurally something happens, and maybe it's a, hey, we decide we don't like the evidence anymore. It's interesting that as opposed to writing a follow-on piece, you would disappear that other one. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong. That's just an interesting thing. I hadn't expected that.
Well, sometimes it's difficult to figure out actually why the case wasn't pursued. You've got to chase down everyone. So often when the person contacts us to let us know, we're putting up 12 stories a day, so make notes to follow on some of them, but you might not know which ones to follow. So we will research it and when someone reaches out to us. But
Patty,
sometimes you actually cannot find out what happened.
I'm sorry to break into that thing right there and interrupt you, but listen, this is Grievance Monday for us right here on the show. We do this usually in the 6 o'clock hour to allow people some catharsis as they explain what has happened to them. Given Black Friday, maybe some travel things post Thanksgiving, any grievances to air?
I have no grievances over this Thanksgiving, except my original plan, which was to go to New Mexico, got canceled for a variety of reasons. So I just had an unexpected free weekend.
Never blame the parole officer. Last thing, you wrote a column here, and this is on a high note. Denver's glowing reputation as Christmas capital of the world. Tell us about it.
This is a story that I resurrect every holiday season. Denver actually lays claim to being the first place holiday lights were illuminated outside. So electrical lights, not candles, but it was over a century ago that a guy, an electrician, strung up lights for his sick kid in a tree outside his window. And that grew into a huge tradition in Denver, which was known as the Christmas tree light capital of the world. Then we've got the city and county building, mm-hmm. which has been lit up since the 30s, and we'll have the Parade of Lights this weekend. So it's a happy story, too. I have no grievances today.
That is, did you do any shopping on Black Friday?
Nope.
Not even online?
I bought 2 airplane tickets, but that doesn't count.
Were they for someone else or yourself?
They were for myself and my mother.
Okay, well, that's something. And then maybe... Yeah, are you guys going to the same place, or did you buy your mom going east?
We're
going
to the same place, and we're going back to Chicago, and let me tell you, it was no Black Friday deal.
No. Oh, listen, my daughter is going to spend a semester in Singapore. We looked at tickets, I'd say 10 days ago, and they were outrageous. They were like $1,600 round trip. And I thought, well, let's just give it a little bit of time. Maybe we're hitting it a bad time. It was true. Giving it time made a big difference. They're now $2,700 round trip tickets. And I'm like, what is going on? Is fuel like gold now? I mean, what is driving this craziness? But you're right. There are no deals to be had anymore.
Not many on flights. And it's just, if you've got to go, you're going to pay the price. People are hungry to leave after almost three years of staying put.
Is this the Colorado Inside Out edition, since it's the first one in December, where the veteran member of the crew there provides gifts for the others? I can't remember. I have to go back and look at the email. Is this the one?
Oh, I'm sure I'll have quite a gift for you, George. Don't you worry about that.
Now I'm scared. Patty Calhoun from Westward, Colorado Inside Out, all things Colorado. Thanks for giving us some of your morning.
Have a good Monday.
Thanks, Patty. Hey, I love interviewing Patty. She's just so smart. And again, that civil thing, like I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that we might not agree on ideologically. You can't really tell from the conversations that you have with her because she's just a professional. You ought to check out her work at Westward as well. She's the editor. She's the co-founder of it. It's been going on forever. And it's really an upbeat kind of nice story. It makes you feel good. Denver's glowing reputation as Christmas capital of the world. It's an oldie but a goodie. You might as well read it right now. Listen, when we come back, I want to change up gears a little bit here. Sorta. We're going to talk a little bit more about some crime stuff that's out there. And then we'll take your calls as well at 303-696-1971. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Patty Calhoun, editor of Westword, one of the co-founders. Also, I guess one of the original, the OGs from Colorado Inside Out. That is on PBS Channel 12. It turns out, I did not realize there were rival competitor public broadcasting stations, 6 and 12. I just thought they were cousins, but it sounds like Channel 12 grew out of a need to, or an interest in wanting to do something different. But this Friday, apparently, Colorado Inside Out, I'll be on it. And if it's going to be a focus on Club Q, it's something that I am making myself much smarter on every day, as you are probably. I don't want to rely just on whatever the print media puts out or just what is put out on TV, not because they aren't trying to do the best job possible, but I do think there is an absence of perspective based on a lack of experience and knowledge in a couple areas. One is the ceiling statute, which I talked about with Patty. And the other is this red flag law. Now, the red flag law has become a bit of a focal point so far for the media because they're like, wait a minute. There was this prior case, which we don't know anything about yet, but it sounds horrific. Threats to mom. There's a body cam that this guy, well, body cam. He filmed himself. They've got their hands on the video. He's got guns. I mean, super concerning stuff. Guy says he's going to be, I think his grandparents are moving out of town and they had kind of raised him. And so like any moron, he decides he's going to make a point by getting into some kind of a death by cop suicide sort of thing. And so he films this thing, obviously disturbing. Police come out. Something happens. And we just don't know what, but we know that the case went away and it got sealed. That's all we know. And the focus instantly becomes on, was there a fit? If you look at the articles online, national too, like The Hill had something even. I mean, I may even still have that upper here, something like that. But it was Colorado governor says he will take a hard look at why red flag law failed to stop Club Q shooting. And in fact, the governor, in his audition to be the Democrat nominee for president coming up in 2024, has really increased his profile in a lot of different ways. And he's got a pretty willing media, even some on the right who are willing to describe him, I think, inaccurately as libertarian. He may have some libertarian leanings, but they're on the left. He's way left. Nonetheless, this is our governor talking about the red flag law on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
I think you believe here, if there were better understanding of how the red flag law worked, perhaps this shooter is prevented from having a gun at the time he wants to do his massacre. Is that your sense?
This looks like this would have been a good instance for the use of Colorado's new red flag law, which has been used several hundred times, but could have been used even more to prevent these kinds of tragic events or more often to prevent self-harm or suicide. What this is, Chuck, is it's a number of states have it. It's a legal way to temporarily remove access to someone's guns while they're experiencing a mental health crisis. And that can be reported usually by a parent, a loved one, or by a sheriff department or law enforcement. And we need to make sure that that's more available and easier when somebody's an immediate threat and there were signs in this troubled person's past that, mm-hmm. that he would have been a threat. It could have instigated our red flag law to remove him from having custody over his weapons while he's experiencing that mental health crisis. So those kinds of tools are data-driven. They work. And they can reduce suicide, and from time to time, they can even reduce the likelihood of these kinds of horrific events.
Maybe that's the greatest strength, if there is one, of the red flag law. And by the way, what's the distinction between self-harm with a firearm and suicide by firearm? Because the governor said it can reduce self-harm or suicide. And I'm like, well, unless you think people are like, I'm just going to wing myself, I'm just going to shoot myself in the foot. It seems like those things are synonymous. Nonetheless, that maybe that's the great strength, is you put people in a position to stop someone from hurting themselves or killing themselves, to use the governor's terms, with a firearm. That's it. I just don't know how many crimes we're stopping with this. I am a firm believer that we ought to be in the business of keeping guns out of the hands of the people that shouldn't have them. That includes convicted felons. It also includes people who are so mentally unstable, whether they're having a psychotic break or some sort of an emotional episode, that they pose an immediate risk to themselves or others. I believe that. I don't know anyone that doesn't believe that. It's just the vehicle that we use to get there. And in Colorado, we have this incredibly progressive, not very due process protecting red flag law. Nonetheless, it's a tool in the toolbox. Now, one of the things that is not discussed right now, like, why didn't Chuck Todd ask the governor, if keeping guns out of the hands of the wrong folks is such a big deal there in Colorado, why did you sign a law permitting drug dealers and car thieves and a whole bunch of other classes of felons access to firearms go? Nobody's asking the governor that. But let's stay focused on the red flag thing. The supposition here is that red flag should have been obtained, and that it would have, could have made a difference. And you heard him say this all the time, like, it could prevent this. It's so speculative, even without knowing the underlying facts. Let's be clear about something. And I wrote a column for the Gazette. I hope it gets printed today. If not today, then tomorrow, that sort of tackles this. And that is, red flag is only valuable if each participant to a firearms transaction is law abiding. That's it. Right? If you have someone who's willing to not run the background check and violate the law, like, let's say, someone who's selling guns under the table, someone who's not a federally licensed gun dealer, a neighbor, a friend, a relative who's like, hey, yeah, go ahead and check out my gun, then red flag is meaningless. It's useless. But the fact that the governor now is engaging in this conversation and teasing the idea, one, that he's going to take a look at it. And let's be clear, the governor taking a look at red flag, to what end? To what end? This guy doesn't have oversight over the execution of laws by a local prosecutor or a local sheriff. Now, he has the authority, as we've seen with Elijah McClain, to rip individual cases away. But in terms of, I'm going to take a strong look at this, I know it sounds super leadershipy and all that, but maybe the strong look ought to be at, how do we take guns out of the hands of convicted felons who statistically use them more often than not? When we have these crimes, more often than not, the convicted felons get their hands on guns. Why would you make it legal for them to do that? And we're going to talk a little bit later on, by the way, about the departing executive director of the Department of Corrections, handpicked by the governor to, I think, shepherd the DOC system through its least successful four-year tenure that I can imagine in my lifetime, at least in my professional lifetime. We'll get to that. But this is the idea that the red flag thing is going to fix these things or prevent these things. And I'm here to tell you, I disagree. Now, one of the things that works to the disadvantage of whether or not red flag works is, we're never going to really know how many crimes we prevented. We can't know that. I get that. But what we can know is its failure rate based on things like this. And so the supposition that if red flag had only been pursued, that would have kept this guy from getting what appears to be a ghost gun, and it wouldn't, and the handgun. And I'm interested to know how he got the handgun. There's so much more to talk about with this, but there's more sound. And this is the governor going into a little more detail on Face the Nation about things he's looking at.
So right now in Colorado, you can have parents or family members go for an extreme risk protection order or red flag law. That's fairly common. It wasn't you pursued in this instance by the mother. You can also have a local sheriff agency do it. In this case, it wasn't pursued by the local sheriff agency. I'm sure what will be looked into is, why wasn't it pursued? What I think we're going to look at in Colorado is potentially expanding that, for instance, so DAs can also seek extreme risk protection orders. We also need to make sure that we publicize the law and make sure that the tools are in people's hands when they need it to remove dangerous weapons that could be used for self-harm or harming others from somebody who's in a mental health crisis.
Yeah, listen, things been on the books for coming up on 4 years, passed in 2019, shortly after this guy became governor. He signed it into law. If it's not publicized enough, who's that on? Whose fault is that? It's been used hundreds of times, is what we've been told. It sounds like publicization is not the issue, but here's the other bigger one. When he asks, it is unclear why this thing wasn't pursued, and I agree with that. But I want you to, for a moment, and when I get this column out, I'll end up reading, and it'll be some of this stuff. For a moment, I want you to envision that the El Paso County Sheriff's Office and the District Attorney's Office are competent in their jobs. That's easy for me. Been there, done that work. And I know those folks. I know Bill Elder. I know Michael down there in the DA's office, Michael Allen. And they're both real crime fighters, and they actually give a crap about public safety, not this wokeism nonsense. Okay? So let's pretend for a moment dude gets himself in a position where the cops roll out and there's a three-hour standoff. Unless you think the police and the sheriff's department are just like, well, looks like we've stopped it. Everybody go back to your own business. My presumption, and it's not completely uneducated, is this, that they went, they arrested this dude. They seized up all the guns. And if there was any bomb-making materials, they would have grabbed that up too. And they booked them into evidence, and they hung on to them. Now, I don't know where they're at today. I don't know if they've been released back to the guy. If that's true, that would be its own explosive story. But let's pretend for a moment they still have all the guns. They still have all the dude's guns. They then refer charges to the DA's office, and the DA's office accepts them. And they file charges against this guy. Couple things happen. Dude got arrested, means he's got to go before a judge. And when you go before a judge, if you're going to get out, and this guy surely got out, he's given a bail or a bond. There are conditions of the bail or a bond. And they're not just, please come back to court. They include a whole bunch of things like, hey, you're going to abstain from alcohol and drug use and a bunch of other things. But they also, in this case, would automatically include no possession of firearms. That too would be entered into the NCIC CCIC system so that if he ever tried to go and legally purchase a firearm during the pendency of that bail or bond, a gun dealer would say, bing, can't sell to you. The other thing that would happen is there would be a protection order automatically put in place. I think pursuant to, and I'm going off the top of my head here, Colorado Revised Statute 18-1-1001, and that protection order would automatically go in place to protect mom or the grandparents or whoever else was a potential victim of this thing. It might even be a protection order that precludes this guy from returning to the home where he had the guns and the bomb. Don't know. But one of the conditions of that protection order would also be do not possess firearms. That too would be entered typically NCIC, CCIC. Anyone trying to sell a gun to this guy would run a background check lawfully and they'd say can't sell to you. Now let's pretend all that stuff happens. The need for a red flag law type protection order at that point would be not only unnecessary, it would be at best redundant, right? Because what more could the red flag order do? Say, don't sell to this guy? Okay, we've already got two of those in place. So the case proceeds forward. I don't know how long it had been proceeding. We know this thing happened in the middle of what, 2021-ish? So let's say it goes through the system at a pretty normal pace. There are appearances, there are arraignments, there are motions hearings. Don't know when the case went away. Hell, it could have even been scheduled for trial. Now, it doesn't seem like it was the product of an acquittal. I think we would know that. But at some point, sometime after arrest and the referral of charges is my guess, this thing meets its demise. Couple huge questions. Who dismissed it? Did the DA dismiss it? If so, we want to know why. And I know that DA Michael Allen would want to tell us why. But he can't, because the way that the super lefty, although it was bipartisan, sealing statute works is once it's sealed, the law enforcement agencies asked about it must say things like, we have no such records of that. Even if the day before it was sealed, they were talking about it in the public eye, they'd have to say, we have no such records. We cannot confirm that such a case exists or has ever existed. That's how this thing works. So my guess is we don't know yet who dismissed the case, but that's important because as I talked about with Patty Calhoun from Westward, what if the judge dismissed the case? And what if he dismissed it, made some, I don't know, rulings, questionable rulings on, I don't know, evidence or admissible? I don't know. I just don't know. Then that same judge is the one that's going to have to decide whether or not to unseal this. And maybe they have a vested interest in not unsealing it because it would make them look bad. That's a problem with the system. We need some other judge. And if that's not the system that's in place, it should be. Some other judge who's disconnected from that individual, hell, maybe even that jurisdiction, to look and decide whether or not to unseal it. That's what's got to be in place. Once we know that, then we can ask questions like, why was it dismissed? But keep this in mind. During the pendency of that prosecution, two orders would have been in place. Now, I want you to envision a judge or a DA dismissing the charges against that person. If they then go and seek a red flag protection order, one, the imminence of it seems much abated, right? Like, how could it be imminent? It's been months that this guy hasn't been able to lawfully possess or acquire a firearm. But more than that, doesn't it look like it's retribution? If a DA had a case dismissed out from under them, to then turn around and say, I get it, presumed innocent, we lost in court for one reason or another, now let's go get a red flag order, it would look like retaliation or retribution. I can't imagine that the public would tolerate such a move, especially for a guy who is now and continues to be presumed innocent of charges that no longer exist, for which the records are sealed. So this idea that there was a failure of the red flag law, I don't see it. Now, I got some ideas on what may grow out of this, and the suggestion by the governor that we're going to expand this to district attorneys, I have some insights into that nonsense as well. When we I've tipped my hand. When we come back, George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. That is undeniable hero Richard Fierro from the Club Q shooting just a week ago, really yesterday morning-ish. It's been just a little over a week. It's obviously spurred a ton of conversations. And, you know, remember in the conversation we had with Patty, it was, hey, it's important to do an analysis here to determine how to maybe prevent this again in the future. And I agree with that. I also think it is a search for blame. We want to find a way to blame the sheriff or blame the DA. And so to some extent here, the governor, if you listen to his comments, and some of them in print, like The Hill and some other places, also on national TV, he talks about we're going to look at expanding who can seek red flag. First off, be super, super skeptical of expanding who can seek red flag. But the idea that we're going to expand it to district attorneys, I think, is misguided. And here's why. If you look at the statute, the statute says law enforcement officer, law enforcement agency. Well, spoiler alert, district attorneys are law enforcement officers. You know who else is a law enforcement officer? Brace yourselves. Attorney General Phil Weiser. In fact, early on, he took a little selfie or had someone take a picture of him with his badge and put it out on social media. Guy's never spent 10 seconds in criminal justice other than a court of appeals case where he argued to release early a child molester or sex offender. I can't remember now. But other than that, no clue. He, too, is a member of law enforcement. What that means is the way the statute is written right now, it needs no additional clarification. I looked for a definition of law enforcement in the specific title, which is 13. And then there's some 24 stuff in there. But the title and article, I don't see a definition in there, let alone one that would preclude district attorneys who are, by statutory definition, peace officers, district attorneys and deputy DAs and chief deputies and assistant DAs. They can all arrest people. Yes, that's horrifying to some extent, but they are members of law enforcement. So you don't need to change the law. This idea that we're going to do something super great, this tells me that whoever is in Governor Polis's ear has no clue what the law is or how criminal justice works. The timing of this is weird, too. It's difficult to imagine a situation where a sheriff would make an arrest on someone like this, and then at some later date, days, weeks, months down the road, the DA would take a look and go, you know what? We should have done a red flag. It just feels like it would be punitive or retributive. This is what I think is coming. This is what could happen. And there could be, through the Attorney General's office, a change to post standards, police officer standards training, to say that best practices are, whenever law enforcement has a situation like this, it is not enough to arrest, it is not enough to seize firearms, it's not enough to put them on a bail or a bond or a protection order that bans them from possessing firearms. That the new best practice will be that law enforcement should seek simultaneous with those other procedural things that are almost, they are automatic, is to seek some type of extreme risk protection order. That's the word for red flag. That is what I think is coming. That may be the one singular change that comes out of this. And it cannot be a mandate. That would be overreaching, not completely unfamiliar to this legislature and this attorney general, but that would be overreaching. But I do see that coming as a potential best practice, but it's discretionary. And so whether or not a Sheriff Elder or a Sheriff Reams or a Sheriff Schrader or a Sheriff fill in the blank would ever end up seeking one of those, that's entirely up to them, and it ought to be up to them. They are elected officials. It's not their job to just bend the knee and do every single thing that the legislature thinks is hunky-dory. It's a tool in the toolbox. It's one I would never advocate them saying I would never, ever use it. I think that's wrong. But at the same time, you can't mandate them to use this in a certain way at a certain time. But I do think that is the one change that can happen. But for the governor to come out, and someone's going to have to prove me wrong here. But for the governor to come out and say we're looking at expanding red flag to cover, to include district attorneys, that's like saying, hey, we're going to expand the speeding law to cover commercial vehicles as well. Turns out they're already covered by the speed limit signs. It's just, it feels like nobody on the governor's staff and nobody at the attorney general's office vetted these comments or at least know us enough to say, hey, let's not say that before we figure out what the law is. Happy to be disproven. Here's the question I want to talk about. Is red flag irrelevant? Is red flag something that cannot prevent these types of mass murders and it's a distraction for us? 303-696-1971. Already starting to see some texts on red flag. Join us in that conversation. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.